The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
All my life I've been hearing about the United States and Cuba. When will the United States do it? I do believe I'll be the honor of having the honor of taking Cuba. That'd be good. That's a big honor.
Taking Cuba.
Taking Cuba in some form, yeah. Taking Cuba. I mean, whether I free it, take it, I think I could do anything I want with it. You want to know the truth? They're a very weakened nation right now.
He must be bored with peace. He's moving on to Cuba, I guess, next. We haven't even really solved Greenland yet. Of course, we're in the midst of war with Iran. And I mean, it's easy to poke fun, but he's right. Cuba's a failed state. Cuba needs help. But you look at this world. I mean, this is certainly not God's world. We're going to be talking about a lot of themes that Herbert Armstrong, I mean, he was harping on it for years, for decades, in fact. Putting your hope, your faith, your trust in man, we're certainly seeing a lot of that. And then we're also seeing failed policy after failed policy. It just isn't working. What political groupings have been able to put forward, all of these boards that have started, all of the talk this past year about peace and you'll notice that there hasn't been as much talk about peace and ending wars. I mean, that went on for months. But now we're talking about war and more war, rumors of wars. It's pretty amazing to watch. We're certainly heading headlong into dangerous times, perilous times, as Paul said. And it makes you think more and more about that Olivet prophecy in Matthew 24 and Luke 21. A lot to get to on today's show. We appreciate you joining us for The Trumpet Daily. The live stream is at our website, thetrumpet.com, and our channels at YouTube and Rumble. If you'd like to email the show, you can submit feedback, td@thetrumpet.com. So what we put together here, this goes on for several minutes, but I was talking to the news gatherers this morning about just the stark contrast that you see between fantasy. You know, the Bible talks about a message of smooth things or a message about peace, about prosperity, about how things are getting better and better and better. And then you just put that alongside the reality, you know, the fact that things are getting worse and worse. It would have been nice to spend even more time on this project. As it happens, I don't give the editors and the news gatherers too much time to pull things together. Some of these clips you've seen in recent weeks and months, but it does a really good job, I think, of just showing you that stark contrast between the fantasy, you know, the smooth sounding words, and of course the reality of today's world. Play clip 10.
As our victory showed, the entire nation is rapidly unifying behind our agenda with dramatic increases in support from virtually every element of our society, young and old.
I do want to talk about the economy, sir, here at home. And I wonder what grade you would give.
A plus.
Economy. A plus.
Yeah, A plus, 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 plus.
Wages are up. Prices are down. Our nation is strong. America is respected. And our country is back.
Central banks are buying gold.
They are.
To
they
back
are.
Up
that
their
is
currencies.
True.
They're getting rid of dollars. They're getting rid of treasuries. We are headed for a economic crisis, again, that will make the 2008 financial crisis look like a Sunday school picnic. And the world is now pulling the rug out from under the U.S. The dollar is going to collapse. It's not a global financial crisis. It's an American financial crisis.
The rest of the world is actually going to benefit.
I think a lot of people are very proud of the job we've done. We've had an amazing year. This has been one of the greatest years.
Fox News alert, a woman was killed today during an ICE operation in Minneapolis.
No!
total anarchy out here. Cops are leaving.
What is your message to ICE agents?
I say we don't want you in Los Angeles. You don't understand the power of the people. We are not going away.
Governor Tim Walz recently likened the conflict on the ground to Fort Sumter, sort of implying that this is the beginning of a civil war. Do you agree with that characterization? Do you feel like there's a civil war?
The governor said
it brings up mixed emotions to represent the U.S. right now. I think there's obviously a lot going on that I'm not the biggest fan of, and I think a lot of people aren't. Just because I'm wearing the flag doesn't mean I represent everything that's going on in the U.S.
There's tremendous unity now in the Middle East, and we really do. We really have peace in the Middle East for the first time ever.
But all of these good things I'm doing, including for religion, you know, religion's back now hotter than ever before. I mean, I have to tell you.
It's called the Board of Peace, and it's all about an easy word to say, but a hard word to produce, peace. But we're going to produce it.
And if we believe that peace is possible, then peace really can be possible.
We stopped 8 wars, and maybe we'll be stopping a 9 very soon. We'll see.
A short time ago, the United States military began major combat operations in Iran.
History unfolding in the Middle East, the U.S. and Israel carrying out an unprecedented military operation, crippling Tehran's leadership by taking out Iran's supreme leader, along with dozens of other top officials.
New attacks are now sending oil prices on another wild ride.
Iran's Revolutionary Guards warning that any ship passing through the narrow strait is a target.
The war in the Middle East threatening to spill well beyond the region as Iran is reportedly trying to activate sleeper cells abroad.
A chilling terror attack.
Allahu Akbar.
The concerning times.
Terrifying day for America. What I want your viewers to understand is this is only just the beginning. We are only just now getting over the top of the country with impunity, where now the munitions we're dropping are still precision-guided munitions. We've got unlimited supplies of them, and we'll be picking those targets and sinking those boats. But I would also remind your audience, it's early. It's 6 days into this campaign. 6 days.
It just seems so insane based on what he ran on. I mean, this is why a lot of people feel betrayed, right? He ran on no more wars and these stupid, senseless wars, and then we have one that we can't even really clearly define why we did it.
Well, but he said he's against endless wars.
Well, they're
against endless wars.
Listen, man, they're all endless.
This is not endless. It's not protracted. We're not allowing mission creep. The president has set a very specific mission to accomplish.
You know, another poll, the handling of Iran, does it make us safer, less safe, no difference? Less safe is at 51%. So there is this skittishness or skepticism out there, even if you're wholeheartedly supporting what the military is doing every day.
I don't think those four service members died for the United States. I think they died for Iran or for Israel. Our government's job is not to look out for Iran or for Israel. It's to look out for us. And this feels very much to me like it is clearly Israel's war.
You mentioned America First. Some who identify with that movement, Megyn Kelly, Tucker Carlson, Candace Owens, Marjorie Taylor Greene, have said from their perspective, this isn't an America First campaign. Do you want to address that criticism?
But what I think some folks have been confused by is that our will might be limited, or our capabilities might be limited, or our munitions might be limited. They're wrong.
As president, I will make peace wherever I can, but I will never hesitate to confront threats to America.
I do believe I'll be the honor of having the honor of taking Cuba.
There you go. What a contrast. It's becoming more and more stark, the drift away from the cold, hard facts of life, as Winston Churchill said, and building these fantasies, these narratives with words like peace and honor and unlimited supplies of equipment, munitions, weapons. All kinds of lofty language. And then the commentary, as you see, it's just all over the map. And it reflects division. There's division in America. Obviously, there's division all over the world. There's division in MAGA. And more of the commentary, at least in America, I mean, it's either Trump can do no wrong or he can't do any right. It's all over the place by those two stark contrasts. It shows you how and why we need God's perspective. I mean, to point out the obvious, you know, the weakness that America has with not having, you know, a secure Greenland or Iran being a terrorist sponsoring nation, the number one in 47, just stepping back from that alone, you would think that the effort in Iran would not only bring MAGA together, you would think the whole world would be supporting this. And yet, like I said yesterday, you've got European leaders saying it's not our war. I mean, even Germany now has flip-flopped. Now Germany's against this effort as Trump stands alone. And Trump, as you'll see later, I mean, he's angry. We lead this effort to take out this state sponsor of terrorism. And we can't even get a little help in the Strait of Hormuz. Of course, we understand the significance of where this is leading. Europe is going to be a big player down the road as America withdraws. But right now, it's in the midst of a conflict that's talking about how great it's going, and it's looking for a way out. It doesn't want this, you know, an extended forever war. That's what President Trump campaigned on. Again, you've got to give him credit for taking a courageous stand, even with what he says about Cuba. It's easy to laugh it off. Yeah, I'm going to have the distinct honor of taking Cuba. We're talking about Cuba now. As we see the Middle East turning into a quagmire, we're going to see that word more often now, especially since the bad orange man is leading it. Nothing causes derangement, mental derangement, quite like Donald Trump and also the Jews. The Jew, look at what it's doing to some of these commentators. You've got the head counterterrorism guy, Joe Kent is his name. He resigns today in protest, saying that we're doing this in Iran because of Israel. So it's those Jews that are behind it. And then he talks about Iran as if it poses no imminent threat to America. Iran's been killing Americans for 5 decades. And that's our counterterrorism guy's assessment? Well, former counterterrorism guy. Now he's out, you know, and he's on board with Megyn Kelly and Tucker Carlson. And then you've got all these, you know, we quote them a lot. Miranda Devine, I mean, just trying to walk the fine line. I mean, because Tucker and company have large audiences, but the fight, it's like a fight in the cafeteria at junior high. Both sides just slinging food at each other. Mark Levin this, Mark Levin that. And then there's Megan over here, and there's Tucker here. I'm old enough to remember the inauguration when we heard wonderful words about America being more unified than ever before, that we were entering into this golden age. We've heard a lot about peace, about prayer, about Bibles flying off the shelves, about a religious revival. You look at this world, the spirit of hatred, the spirit of murder, the spirit of division, it's never been so strong. That's because Satan's been cast down, and he's the author of will worship. And we're seeing so much of it everywhere. We're being overwhelmed by our sins. And no amount of smooth words can erase that. It says in 2 Timothy 4 and verse 3, the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine, but after their own lusts shall they heap to themselves teachers having itching ears. In other words, they're going to put forward teachers or commentators that just tell them what they want to hear. They don't want to hear sound doctrine. They don't want to hear a message of repentance, a warning in love. How many prominent leaders in Noah's day, even as Noah was constructing this ark for a century, how many leaders ridiculed him and mocked him and said, you know what? This, I mean, this age we're living in right now, never mind what Noah's saying, it's better than ever. Peace is breaking out all over the place. We're ending wars right and left. The Board of Peace. I mean, we should have known that was trouble from the beginning just because of the name. Human beings, they love to take credit when there's, you know, successes that might last for a week. And then when it gets bad, I mean, just look at how human nature can see these facts on the ground. I mean, we, years ago, remember the Summer of Love? And how ridiculous it was to see these commentators standing in front of burning buildings saying, yeah, it's going really well out here. It's mostly peaceful. The spirit of that kind of deceptive lying, it's all over the place. It's on the left and the right. Standing in front of a dumpster fire and maintaining that everything is perfect. Everything's perfect. So you have MAGA, a lot of them very upset about another forever war. They're upset, as Alex Jones said yesterday, because Donald Trump hasn't gone after the deep state. They're upset because I guess you've got the SAVE Act being debated finally, but that's probably not going to go through because there's not enough people that want election integrity. So it's just more of the same. How many prominent leaders in Sodom and Gomorrah thought, you know what, we're a sophisticated society. I mean, it was Abraham that saved that area. You can read the history in Genesis 14. And then Abraham prayed for Sodom and Gomorrah later in the story. But there was a cutoff point, and finally God said, that's enough. Lot, you better get your family out. Universal sin is leading to universal destruction. I mean, that's what we're facing. And people don't want to face it. People won't face it. Those that were leading society in the days of Noah, in Sodom and Gomorrah, I'm sure right up until the bitter end, they were maintaining this. I mean, we are entering into a golden age of peace and prosperity. In that montage we played for you, you heard President Trump say that there's tremendous unity in the Middle East. In other clips, he talked about eternal peace in the Middle East. Israel's widening its operations in Lebanon right now. And they're seeking help from Germany. And you've got the Strait of Hormuz. You've got the war with Iran. That's into its third week now. The Middle East is not unified. There is no peace in the Middle East. Far from it. And, you know, President Trump should be congratulated for at least recognizing the evil. But you have people talking about the Ayatollah, the third or the fourth one, whichever one they're on right now, as if these are peacemakers. Iran, or maybe like Joe Kent, Iran is no imminent threat for America. So what are we doing there? I'm resigning in protest. Well, I'm sure he'll get a good interview with Megyn Kelly or Tucker or whoever now that he's taken this stand. But all of this, really, it's a satanic diversion from the cold, hard facts of reality. Luke 17, verse 26. We've spent a lot of time in these chapters, Luke 15, 16, 17, 18, in life and teachings recently. And Jesus says here, and as it was in the days of Noah, so shall it be also in the days of the Son of Man. And what were those days like? Well, read about it in Genesis 6. Did Jesus Christ come along and say, you know what, all that happened, or all that's written about Noah and his day, it's a good storybook for our children, but it didn't really happen. I mean, you don't believe that, do you? Jesus believed. Jesus preached that it's going to be just like it was before the worldwide flood. It's going to be just like it was then. Today, in these last days, they did eat, they drank, they married wives. They were given in marriage until the day that Noah entered into the ark and the flood came and destroyed them all. You see, they were eating and drinking. There was some physical prosperity. They were still celebrating. They were still having banquets. They were convincing themselves that everything's just getting better and better. Look at all that we've accomplished. Look at all the peace that's spreading over the world as we know it. It says in verse 30, even thus shall it be in the day when the Son of Man is revealed, or in the day that Jesus Christ returns. Human nature, you see, human nature has not changed. Not one bit. Or if it has, it's changed for the worse. 2 Timothy 3:13. Evil men, seducers, wax worse and worse. It gets worse in particular because Satan and his demons have been cast down. And now they're confined to this earth. And you see their fingerprints on everything. We are getting worse as a society. Our sins are getting worse, more grotesque than ever, more perverse. As I say, that spirit of division, that spirit of hatred, it's everywhere. In my father's book, The Epistles of Peter, he says God is going to take mankind to the point where people will know there's no hope in man. And they're willing to heed God's word, the Bible. This is where God is taking us. He'd rather us study the book of Jeremiah, Jeremiah 17, verse 5, verse 9. Read about human nature. Read about how putting your trust in a human being brings curses into your life. God wants us to trust Him, to look to Him. If we're in the midst of a quagmire, to look to Him for the way out. God wants us to confront our sins. My father says in this booklet, the experiment of human government will prove itself a grandiose failure, and people will begin to recognize that they do need God's help. One of these days, we'll have to put together a montage of all that was said before the last presidential election. God intervening, God saving President Trump with the head tilt, God bringing him back, Trump winning all of those swing states, Trump doing the impossible, what so many people said was impossible. He did it. And there were plenty that were crediting God. You don't see so much of that anymore. And we're only a year and a half removed from that miraculous election. You don't see people giving God credit. You don't see people, you know, seeking God. You just see the references to religion and Bibles and prayer. And there's going to be more of that as we come into that National Prayer Day in May and the country's birthday celebration in July. This is going to be quite a summer. And how many people are going to be even more blind to what's actually happening, the cold, hard facts of reality? Because they're being constantly told that, hey, there's a religious revival and there's unity in the Middle East. Wars are ending. The economy's booming. Everything's great. It says the experiment of human government will prove itself a grandiose failure, and people will begin to recognize that they do need God's help. I read that, but it's worth repeating. What a world that will be when human arrogance has been leveled. People will be humble and childlike, ready to be taught by God. It says, but to reach that stage, mankind must experience destruction, just short of destroying all humanity, every man, woman, and child. Now, that's New Testament theology. You can scoff if you want. But what did Jesus say in Matthew 24? Let's read it. Let's read it. And then as we read this, ask yourself, why don't you hear this more from the preachers of today? The Olivet Prophecy, What did the disciples, the students of Christ, ask him at the start of this Olivet prophecy? As they sat upon the Mount of Olives, verse 3, the disciples came to him privately saying, tell us, when shall these things be and what shall be the sign of your coming and of the end of this world? What's going to be the sign? What's going to happen just before you return to this earth? Even the preachers don't preach that. We recorded a Life and Teachings podcast last week. Jesus Christ, born to be king. It's like Mr. Armstrong said in a clip we played on that program. You know, okay, you hear about the preachers say he's our Savior, and yes, he is. He's also king. He qualified to replace Satan on the throne of this earth. But that doesn't happen, replacing the devil, until he returns a second time. And that's coming soon. Why don't you hear about it? Why don't you hear that Jesus was born to be king? It's in Luke 1, it's in John 18, it's in Revelation 19, it's all through the New Testament. It shows how little we actually look into the Holy Bible to see what God says. So the disciples say, tell us what's going to happen right before you return. Tell us about the end of this age. And Christ lays it out. It's pretty clear. It says here, verse 21, this is Matthew 24, for then shall be great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time. No, nor ever shall be. There's never going to be anything like it. So, you know, the worst of man's experience with war, I guess World War II, nuclear bombs or atomic bombs, two of them blowing up, just obliterating entire cities. You mean what's coming is even worse than that? Verse 22 says, and except those days should be shortened, there should no flesh be saved alive. Wow, that's quite a statement. It says, but for the elect's sake, those days shall be shortened. God's going to intervene to put a stop to the madness. And then, like my father says in the Epistles of Peter book, then we'll want to look to God for help, for answers. And we'll stop looking to men. Because for 6,000 years, man has shown himself to be utterly incapable of solving the problems of this world. It's because this world is cut off from God. Happened in Genesis 3. Listen, I mentioned the two sides. You know, it's either President Trump can do no wrong or President Trump can do no right. There's very little in between. Listen to Sean Hannity from his show last night, clip 5.
If these are the talking points after a 2-week historic military success, can you imagine how legacy media, Democrats, isolationists, would have covered World War II, where nearly 500,000 Americans died, or even D-Day, where 2,500 Americans lost their lives slamming those beaches at Normandy, or Pearl Harbor, 2,400 Americans killed, thousands of Americans killed during Iraq and Afghanistan. Donald Trump learned the lessons from Reagan, learned the lessons from Iraq and Afghanistan, learned the lessons of the last century, nearly 100 million human souls murdered in the name of some ism. But now many on the left, some on the right, are in full panic mode over what is a historic miracle unfolding before our eyes, known as Operation Epic Fury. Thankfully, this has been the most successful military campaign in history.
Now, you know, you have in one soundbite Hannity, who's completely right about the legacy media and how they would cover World War II and how they've looked for everything negative about the operation with Iran. And I mean, for 2 weeks, we've seen a kind of warfare that it is spectacular. Push-button warfare. Americans flying halfway around the world on bombing campaigns and then flying back to Nebraska or somewhere. I mean, that is awesome power on display. And the president does deserve credit for finally standing up to an enemy that's been declaring war on America for a half century. But then at the same time, in the same soundbite, you hear this commentator talking about this being a miracle, a historic miracle. And then he says it's the most successful military campaign in history. In history? And so we've learned every lesson coming out of World War II, coming through all of the failed military campaigns of the past 50, 60 years? Have we really? Well, we've brought to your mind some pretty important history, even yesterday, about what Churchill and Roosevelt understood regarding unconditional surrender. Have we learned that lesson? President Trump called for that a week ago. And now you see the objectives. They're changing every day. Every day. It has been awesome to look at some of the technology. We'll talk later, if I have time, we'll talk later about just the astronomical cost for war. I mean, literally, I'm talking literally, the cost. How much does it cost? How much do you spend to wage war? You see stories coming out of Israel about just how expensive this is since October 7, going into Gaza, now expanding the war effort in Lebanon. And of course, working together with the United States, at least for now, in the campaign against Iran. But just coming back to the commentary we see daily, some man can do no wrong, they say. And then the other side says everything he does is completely wrong. As awesome as this powerful display has been, as we've covered on this program, it still is very much a limited war campaign. No boots on the ground. If anything, we may have turned it over to a more extreme government in Iran. To be sure, so many of its programs have been decimated. But as I said yesterday, I mean, the mindset, the philosophy is still there. It's still there. And, you know, Iran enjoys strong support from maybe not a majority of its people, but from a lot of its people. Regime change didn't exactly change the mindset. And then you have the United States, angry and in a lot of ways justifiably so, that Europe and other areas are not, they're not willing to help secure a passageway that Europe's more dependent on than America. It shows how long they've been living off America's dime. And Trump yesterday in the Oval Office, he says, look, we've got troops in South Korea, we've got troops in Japan, we've got troops in Germany, we've paid for all this. And he's right. He's right. He said one of the big reveals out of this campaign in Iran has been to show us what NATO members really think about the United States and their unwillingness to help the United States in a time of need. Now, on the other side, if it's such total obliteration, if America's won this war, you know, human nature being what it is, of course, these leaders in Europe are saying, well, if you've won everything, if you're dominating, what do you need our help for? That's a good point. It's a pretty good point that America can't secure, that Seagate is telling as well. But here is coming back to the divide. You know, either President Trump can do no wrong, or everything he does is wrong and leading to World War III. That's the commentary that you get to choose from, night in and night out. Alex Jones, Evidently, President Trump lost him in recent days as well. This is a message he recorded, I think, yesterday, clip 9.
What Trump's really doing here is attacking his critics. He doesn't want to say, don't attack me in the Iran war. He wants to say, leave Mark Levin alone. He's the litmus test when he's calling for censorship and all the rest of it, of people like Tucker Carlson and myself, or I will say that you're not part of our movement. Well, Trump, you don't have to worry about that. People are already very upset with you and already basically understanding that your legacy is being destroyed by you breaking your promise about this war and a lot of the other things you've done, like no real prosecutions of the deep state. So if you want to continue to self-inflict wounds on your own name and own political dynasty, I'm sad about that, but you know that's your life. You can do it. We're going to stay true to our populist, conservative, nationalist, Christian ideas that you wrote in on, but that we launched. And so many other things you're starting to break with why we voted for you. Now, still, you're better than the Democrats. So I don't hate you. I still promote the good things you do. But when you say, hey, if you criticize Mark Levin, that's a litmus test. You're by the wayside. You're a failure. You're in the dustbin of history. That's a neocon talking point of Mark Levin and Ben Shapiro. They're the ones that have almost no viewers or listeners anymore. They're the ones that are incredibly unpopular. And if you think taking on their political views is the right thing to do or is going to help you, then we can't stop you. But I don't want to be at your cool table, which is really the short bus of politics, okay? We're the avant-garde. We're the cutting edge. And I don't want to be at the table with Mark Levin and Ben Shapiro, self-appointed control freak jokes, or Benjamin Netanyahu. And I'm not with the Muslims, and I'm not with Ilhan Omar, and I'm not with the Iranians. Got it? Not with that, and not with you.
There you go. And every time I hear this, or hear another one, today it's Joe Kent. I keep thinking back to the inauguration. America's never been so united and together. So supportive of the agenda. We're at war. Right now we're at war with possibly one of the most evil nations on earth. And yes, we can't afford it. Yes, there are other factors at play here. Yes, there are problems all over the place. And there's problems at home. And so the isolationists come out in full force saying, we don't want to do anything abroad, ever, never again. And there's President Trump not only going into Iran, but now he's talking about Cuba. Cuba's next. He'll consider it a great honor to take Cuba. And what do you think Alex Jones and others will think about that? America is bitterly divided. And it should be an obvious point. It's bitterly divided. Here's some from the other side. Mark Levin, clip 8.
Who are these people, these podcasters? What do you know about them? What do you know about them? What do you know about Tucker Carlson and Megyn Kelly and Steve Bannon? The two of them have mostly been in media, Kelly and Carlson. They haven't contributed anything to anybody, any community, any state, and so forth and so on. And you'll notice most of them have guests. Why? Because they can't carry the show. They have nothing to say. They haven't learned anything. They haven't done anything important. So they bring in guests. It's a conga line of freaks, frauds, and phonies. They just bring them in. The more crazy, the better. Or their antics, again, the cursing, they think you want to hear that, or they'll smoke pot on air and say, look at me, I can smoke pot. And they'll say things that resonate.
So there he is. And I was thinking about, remember the Matt Walsh clip we played where he talked about going off to these conservative conferences where so many of those present, they don't exactly uphold conservative values when it comes to morals, you know, marriage and family, fidelity, that kind of thing. So much division, the spirit of division, the spirit of hatred, the spirit of murder. In the Washington Post, it says young voters helped elect Trump, but some have regrets over the Iran war. I feel betrayed, one young man says. I don't know why we're fighting in Iran if we have never been attacked. We've never been attacked. Young people who voted for Trump, according to the Washington Post, which has its own agenda, it has its own derangement for sure, but they are convinced that America has never been attacked by Iran. Joe Kent's wife, I believe, was taken out by ISIS. Whether in Iraq or somewhere, I forget which country. If anything, you would think he would know. A former military guy. How many of those explosive devices came stamped with the Made in Iran? So many attacks from Iran. So much terrorism sponsored, paid for. So many terrorists given safe harbor. It says a majority of voters between ages 18 and 29 say they oppose the military campaign in Iran compared to 40% of all adults. So young people evidently are leaving Trump. They're disillusioned. They're listening to Joe Rogan or maybe now Alex Jones saying, what are we doing? America the divided. The divided states of America. This other article, the right has a podcast problem. We witnessed one of the greatest political comebacks of all time. We won the presidency. We won the Senate. We won the House. We won demographics nobody thought were possible. We won in places nobody thought were winnable at all. And then, somehow, the most influential voices on our side decided that the most important thing to do with that historic mandate was to tear each other apart. Zero people in the conservative base asked for this. Not one person, not a single person any of us have ever talked to in real life is sitting there thinking, what I really need right now is to watch my favorite podcasters go to war with each other. And yet that's what's happening. And as I said, it really is a masterful diversion away from the problems that are eating away at America, like cancer, the sickness that goes from head to toe. It says, we, the real people on the right, are tired, not tired of fighting. We're tired of watching the fight go in the wrong direction. We want the border secured. We want their grocery bill to come down. We want our kids to get real education. We want Democrats out of power at every level, school board, state legislature, Congress, all of it. That's the assignment. That's always been the assignment. That's what we all care about the most. Instead, what we got was grown adults with eight-figure audiences spending their airtime on personal beef that does absolutely nothing for a single voter anywhere. Fighting, division, strife. So much for unity. And, you know, then you bring the Democrat Party into it. It's more of the same. Byron York at the Washington Examiner. Why is there still uncertainty about the Iran war aims? 65% of respondents answered in the negative when asked, do you think the Trump administration has clearly explained the goals of U.S. military action in Iran? 65% answered in the negative. You know, it's easy to look at this war effort and say, it's about time. And we've noted this a few times already. But, you know, looking at it from President Trump's standpoint, is there a war easier to explain the rationale behind or for than this one with Iran? Look at what they've done to our soldiers. Look at what they did at the start, holding Americans hostage for over a year. Look at all of the terrorist acts that they've sponsored. They've been killing Americans, as they say, for a half century. It seems like this would be a unifying message. But it's not. Why? Because America is being overwhelmed with problems. Just like Leviticus 26, just like Deuteronomy 28 says. It's overwhelming us. The Guardian says, if the U.S. is winning, why ask NATO for help? Well, you know, The Guardian again, a left-wing rag. And they've got a pretty serious case of Trump derangement syndrome. But they're calling out the president for the words that he says about total victory, unconditional surrender. Wall Street Journal says Iran war hits Europe with an energy shock it can't afford to absorb. Let me just finish with this. It's been in my notes for a few days now. But just the cost, as I said earlier, this is from Ynet Global, the most expensive war in the country's history, 22 billion shekels in 2 weeks. This is talking about Israel. How much is it costing? 1.8 billion shekels or 580 million a day. A day. So how long is this sustainable for little Israel? You can see why they're reaching out to Germany for help. It's a pretty big mistake. But we need help from every direction. A single Tomahawk missile, this is the U.S. now, cost about $3.5 million. $3.5 million. And the Center for Strategic and International Studies estimates that the U.S. fired 168 of these missiles during the first 100 hours of operation against Iran. This is just the Tomahawk missile. And then you've got all the missile defense. I mean, I forget what the figure is for Israel every time they have to go and try to shoot down a missile that's coming in from Iran. The first 100 hours of epic fury have cost U.S. forces at least an estimated $5.8 billion, or about 0.69% of the entire 2026 U.S. defense budget. I mean, that's just the first 100 hours. So that's like 4 days. Now we're into, what, day 18? $5.8 billion. In 4 days, we spent almost 1% of the Pentagon's budget. Now we're 18 days into it. How long is this sustainable? In addition to operational costs, the U.S. has lost significant military assets in Iran's retaliatory strikes, according to estimates by... And keep in mind what Pete Hegseth said in that montage we played. We have an unlimited supply of munitions. I mean, it's a never-ending supply. Well, does that statement reflect reality? The cold, hard facts of reality? Or is it more fantasy talk? We've got a strong will. We've got an unlimited supply. We're just starting. I mean, this could go on forever, but hey, it's not a never-ending war. Don't think it's anything like a forever war. That is so Joe Biden. That is so dear leader. This time, I mean, it's working. We're going to get total defeat, unconditional surrender, probably in 3-4 weeks. The commentary, it's everywhere, isn't it? It says here, 13, the updated figure, President Trump, I think he brought this out to Congress, at the 12-day mark of the war, it cost $11.3 billion by day six. Well, Iran war cost estimate update, $11.3 billion at day six, $16.5 billion at day 12. In other words, war is expensive. And I know everybody understands that and knows this. But all of this sophisticated warfare, this push-button warfare, it costs a lot of money. And America is spending money that it doesn't have. And arguing today over what? The Save America Act. We got to save our voting. And that'll just end up in arguments that go on for days, no doubt. This is what President Trump, I probably have time to get to this last section, but he was in the Oval yesterday talking about just how angry he is with NATO members, that won't provide support in the Strait of Hormuz, clip three.
And I've always felt that was a weakness of NATO. We were going to protect them, but I always said when in need, they won't protect us. Now, this isn't need. Need would be one of the big boys. They should be jumping to help us because we've helped them for years stay out of wars. Because my attitude is we don't need anybody. We're the strongest nation in the world. We have the strongest military by far in the world. We don't need them. But it's interesting. I'm almost doing it in some cases, not because we need them, but because I want to find out how they react. Because I've been saying for years that if we ever did need them, they won't be there. Not all of them, but they won't be there.
So there he is. He's got some big concerns and gripes about Europe. And walking the fine line. You know, we don't need anybody. We're too powerful. We're too big to fail. But at the same time, this has been revealing because we've asked for help and they won't give us help. And there's a lot of truth to that. But again, is inviting Europe in, is that the solution? This is another one from yesterday, clip four.
We've been protecting these countries for years with NATO because NATO is us. You can ask Putin. Putin fears us. He doesn't fear. He has no fear of Europe whatsoever. He fears the United States of America and the military that was built by me in the first term.
He fears the U.S. He's not afraid of Europe. This last one here, he's talking about this in the context of what's happened here with Iran. And the greatest thing to come out of this, as he says here in this next clip, clip seven.
We have 45,000 troops in Japan. We have 45,000 troops in South Korea. We have 45,000, 50,000 troops in Germany. We defend all these countries. And then, do you have any minesweepers? And they say, well, would it be possible for us not to get involved? I've been saying it for a long time. This is the greatest thing to come out of this. We spend trillions and trillions of dollars on NATO to defend other countries. And I always said, but if it ever comes time to defend us, they're not going to be there. Many of them would not be there. And we're going to have to start thinking more wisely in this country.
The greatest thing to come out of this latest round, this latest conflict, is that we can't trust Europe. And, well, Europe feels the same way. We know this. Europe can't trust Donald Trump. In their minds, I mean, Donald Trump can do no right. They're at that extreme. And so the break, the transatlantic break, it continues. How much longer before those troops that he talked about in Japan, in Germany, are gone? And at the same time he's saying this, we can't trust Europe. They won't help America. And oh, by the way, Germany, I hope you build a new war machine. Go for it. You see where this is leading? It's leading to what we read earlier in Matthew 24. Great tribulation. It's leading to what Paul said in 2 Timothy 3. These are dangerous times. And the message the world needs, like Churchill said, it needs the message about the cold, hard facts of this present evil world, but also for sure, the hope that rests in the return of Jesus Christ to this earth. That's what the disciples were asking him about in Matthew 24. Tell us what the sign will be. Show us the signs that point to your return, your spectacular return to this earth as King of Kings and Lord of Lords. We could go through Revelation 19. Maybe we'll do that at a later time. But if you'd like to go through it more, that Life and Teachings podcast, we recorded last week. I think that plays this coming weekend on select TV stations. And also, of course, our website, thetrumpet.com. That's all we have time for on today's show, the fastest moving hour in broadcasting. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. Thanks for joining us today, and we'll see you again tomorrow.